Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Jeremy Blair.
And I'm Ryan Wayland. So I'm not in the closet anymore.
No, not today.
No. Although I will say, holding the mic was fun.
It was fun?
It was fun. Like, I didn't mind it, but the problem was the cable. Mm-hmm. Anytime I moved it, because I went back and listened to the episode, and you can hear it kind of like making like a, I don't know what's the proper wording for it, but mm-hmm. like a cracking, I guess. Like you would if like you were seeing someone like someone live, you know, like yeah. that. Like yours just did it.
Did it?
Yeah. Okay. Or maybe you're just moving something. I don't know.
I don't know what I was doing.
But no, I did. I did. I mean, my arm didn't get as tired as I was worried it was going to. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I like that.
Yeah.
Just being able to just, oh shit, uh-huh. Now I can't get it back down.
Oh, Jesus.
There we go.
Ruined
there
it.
We go.
Dope.
Well, and thankfully, only the people watching were the only ones to see that. People listening are like, now he sounds far away.
Yeah, maybe. Or, yeah. You know, like, how are the acoustics in there, by the way? Pretty good?
I mean, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. Ashley was like, you sound great. I mean, you know, we used the media room closet for the audio for the Paranoid
That's
short
true.
Film.
That's true, because the acoustics were better. It was quieter in there.
Yeah.
All the clothes really dampened the
sound. The sound as you read Stephen King verbatim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see. What do I want to shout out before we get started? I do want to shout out Sum 41, Simple Plan, and The Offspring. Wife and I went and saw them last night, which Sunday, and it was awesome. So
yeah, man, it's between the two of us, we have seen all the old school emo bands, you know, Blink-182 for me and Ashley last month, which was rad as hell. And I think what I was texting you, like where y'all went and saw them, I'm like 90% certain I saw Green Day and AFI at that same venue.
Yeah.
I'm like pretty sure.
It was warm. I'll tell you that. It was about 110 when we got there.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, y'all were outside. Like, thank God when we saw Blink, we were inside.
Yeah, of course. Because, I mean, it was brutal. Like, the stage had, like, AC tubes and fans. So I guess the, you know, Simple Plan didn't die, you know?
Well, you know, and those guys are from and I think Sum 41 too. They're both those bands are from Canada. So I'm sure this heat was going to kill them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was so much fun. Music was dope. All those guys sound amazing still. So
yeah, man. And I gotta say, the video you sent me of them playing the What's New Scooby Doo theme song. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was tight, man. We were really excited.
You know, and what's so crazy is, you know who we have to thank for that? Let's be 100% honest with ourselves here. Yeah. We have James Gunn to thank for that.
Do we?
Because James Gunn wrote both live action Scooby-Doo movies.
So you think that without the live action Scooby-Doo movies, we wouldn't have What's New Scooby-Doo?
100%.
Okay. You heard it here, guys.
Well, and because, you know, Simple Plan wrote a song for Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
Did they?
And then I think that's what got them the gig for the What's New Scooby-Doo theme song.
Yeah, Simple Plan was tight. Sum 41, awesome. Offspring, I mean, just blew everyone's faces off. So,
yeah, man. So of the three bands, hang on, everyone. Of the three bands, I would rank them like this. Not because I like one more than the other,
okay.
But it would be Simple Plan, Sum 41, The Offspring.
Really?
Yeah, because I love Simple Plan, dude. That was one of the first real, like, kind of pop punk, well, besides Blink-182, kind of the more clean pop punk bands I got into when I was a kid.
He swore a lot.
Oh, well, yeah. I think now that they're older, they just don't care anymore.
Sure.
Because, you know, their first two albums, didn't have a parental advisory content on it, and then their third album did. And anyway, that's some lore for y'all. And if I keep going, I'm going to keep going down this rabbit hole. But yeah, man, I'm jealous. I would have loved to see any of those bands live, but and I'm glad y'all didn't die.
Yeah, it was really hot, but it was fine. We survived. Yeah, it was late enough to where, you know, the sun wasn't on us for too long, so that was fine.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Nice. Well, buddy, what are we talking about today?
Dude, I'm really excited for today's. I love this movie. I've seen it, I don't know how many times. It is, again, like I said last week, it's one of the most rewatchable movies that I've ever seen. We are talking David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross. That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. You know, man, I'd heard about this movie before. Like I said last week, the only thing I'd ever known about this movie was that little joke from Zach and Mary McPorno, which I am not going to repeat because I said it last week. So I didn't really know what to expect going into this movie. And man, I gotta say, I would love to see the actual play of this. Like, if the movie's like this, I want to see the play.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Well, now the play is like the movie. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into a little bit of that. But the movie influenced the revival of the play. And so there was stuff that was in the original play that that didn't have a lot of the things the movie did. And now the play has those story elements.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So, well, and then you said last week that that the guy who wrote the play wrote the screenplay for the movie.
Yes, David Mamet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, all right. Well, so then that makes sense then that he.
I'm gonna triple check that, but yeah.
but that makes sense why he would probably know, like. Okay, so he would know, like, you know, here we can change this a little bit, or, you know, we can just get rid of this plot line completely. But, you know, man, I loved it. I know we usually wait a little bit, but I loved it. The dialogue was really fast paced, which when the movie started, I'll be 100% honest, because I do want to spend some time talking about the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I was a little like, are they going to talk like this the whole movie? And then halfway through I was like, ah, oh, man, like, I'm in it, like, let's keep going. But yeah, man, I loved it.
Especially
considering I am in sales, so I wanted to give a disclaimer though. Like I said, I am in sales. I would never use any of these tactics on anyone. Granted, I'm not dealing with this much money, you know.
Yeah,
that's true. I think the most I've ever dealt with was, I want to say, I was helping a business account open up like 5 lines, and that was a lot of money, but because they were buying 5 brand new phones.
Yeah.
But that wasn't $82,000. So, yeah. So Jeremy, would you like me to give everyone their synopsis?
Yeah.
All right. So, Glengarry Glen Ross follows these 4 salesmen of their property sales, right? Property salesman. Just over the course of these 2 days, where they are essentially given an ultimatum by the top salesman of their company, which is get good or you're fired. And honestly, sidebar, I've been in sales pretty much since I've had a job. And I've had those kinds of conversations before. But anyway, so each salesman kind of deals with it in their own way. We've got the always amazing Jack Lemmon, the legendary Alan Arkin.
There you go.
Rest in peace.
Yep.
The also equally amazing Ed Harris. And then Mr. Pacino himself. And these four guys all are dealing with this news in their own way. And the movie does a great job of showcasing each one of their strengths, their talents, mm-hmm. in sort of a not necessarily nonlinear format, but kind of, I would say, what Tarantino would later use in his filmmaking, which is, we're getting this little section of the story. Now we're going to follow these guys real quick and get this section of the story. Mm-hmm. But then we're going to come back to these guys and, you know, fill in these gaps here. And that's really the synopsis of the movie. Yeah. There's more I want to get into, which I know you want to get into. But that's it. There's these four salesmen dealing with this impossible task. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I forgot to mention, and trying to get these leads of the Glengarry leads. Which is this property in Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Yeah, this property in Florida that they're trying to sell. And you know what, man? Honestly, the whole time, and this is a good place for me. If you don't want to start here, that's fine. I want to start with the leads themselves.
Okay, yeah, start with the leads.
Because I have to cold call. Mm-hmm. AT&T, or... Well, it's too late. I've already said it. And I've said it on mic before. We are given leads as well. And it tells us what they are and how, you know, what we need to do. And I'm going to be honest, man. Cold calling is not fun. I don't like doing it.
Of course it's not. Just fun. It sounds terrifying.
It is. That's why I don't like it, because it's so terrifying. Because, like, I have had... people kind of like Jack Lemmon who aren't really interested. They don't want to hear what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, you know. But, you know, I was feeling their struggle the whole mm-hmm. movie. Like, give me the leads, you know?
Yeah.
Now I'm the opposite in, you know, like, oh no, these leads are bad. Give me new ones. It's no, just give us new leads. We've already worked these. Give us new ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's from my perspective, it was like, yeah, it makes sense why they need these leads, or mm-hmm. why they're saying, like, I can't close these. These are old, you know, because I have had some leads like that. They're like, I've been trying to close this for a month now.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear what I have to say. But my sympathy goes so far, because unlike the movie, we can just close out that lead completely.
Oh.
So, like, if we feel like it's not going anywhere, we can just lead closed, no sale was made.
I see.
As were these guys, or at least how the film is presenting it, they have to close it, and then they'll get new ones. And if they can't close it, well, you better keep working it.
Yeah.
And honestly, from another salesman position, if you know you can't close that lead, it's impossible to mm-hmm. try to close it.
Wow. I didn't know that. Okay. So first off, I didn't know that, like, so I know what leads are, and you, even if you don't, like I didn't the first time I saw this movie, you get it with context. Yeah. I didn't know that, like, that you get literally, they're called leads for real.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So now for the rest of your career, you have to go, the leads are weak, you're weak. You know, you gotta start talking about the leads, man.
I'm not going to go into detail on the off chance that someone somewhere hears this episode, but as we were talking about off mic, I had a situation like the first 5 minutes of this movie starts.
Yeah.
Very recently. And it was very... very fun to relive that moment.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, now you can just be like, you know, talk about Glengarry leads and, you know, like, just talk about leads all day. How do you know? It's because you haven't seen the movie before. I get that. But that would be all I would do all day long. You know, just talk about leads.
Well,
and leads are for closers. Yeah. You know?
Well, I'm going to be real now. I may start flooding my colleagues chat that we have with just all Glengarry stuff now.
You have to. We can start off with, I mean, we talked about the leads a little bit, but.
Well, I mean, that's all I wanted to say is from someone who actually does have to deal with leads. that I've dealt with these. My sympathy does, like, I'm like, okay, I can sympathize with this. I can relate to this. But then that goes so far, because I'm still in full control of my leads, as where these guys have to deal with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey playing himself.
Imagine they're like, you know, why are you acting like this, Kevin? Like, is there something we should know about? And he's like, no.
So what's, I guess now we can jump in. So,
okay.
I think the reason why this works so well, and how he wants to, David Mamet wants to tell this story, and he's choosing salesmen, right? Mm-hmm. He's not, it's not a story about sales. Like, that's not the point of the story.
No, but not really.
He's telling the story using salesmen and using that world of sales, especially real estate and property mm-hmm. sales. He worked at a property sales firm, and he was the Kevin Spacey of the office.
Yeah, I did read that today,
which is that. Crazy, right? Because mm-hmm. I would think that, you know, I knew David Mamet had worked in sales, and that's in property sales, and that's how, you know, he nailed this world, right? And how it works, and what it feels like to be in those situations. But I would have never guessed that he was the manager, because the manager is such a piece of shit.
That, yeah.
And such a nobody, such a prissy and self-righteous, and sort of, you know, he's awful. And I guess maybe that's how he saw himself, you know, because I can't imagine working, and I'm sure I have. I definitely have. But most of my jobs, I have worked for people that have done my job before, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine having a boss that has no idea what it's like, right?
Yeah. I was gonna say
high stakes too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the way he writes it, and the way this world is so life or death when it comes to these men's jobs. And we'll talk more about that here in a minute. But I was just I was fascinated this time learning that he was the manager, and that, you know, why would he write the manager that way if that's who he was, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is interesting, because, you know, because you're right. This world is so high stakes, you know, because, like, you know, with my job, like, yeah, someone misses a sale. Like, yeah, it's not good. Like, it doesn't look good on them, doesn't look good on me, doesn't look good on my store. But until it becomes a repeated issue, it's not, like, job threatening, unless it was a huge blow up thing anyway. There's other factors, mm-hmm. but with these guys is you miss a sale or the office manager mishandles the sale. Well, then that's it. Like, you know, as Al Pacino said, well, I guess I'm not eating for a month. Then what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And it's insane. Like, I don't think, you know, I'm not cut out for that kind of sales.
So what David Mamet does so well in this is he has created a desperate situation. So that's the core value of this story is desperation, right? That's the mm-hmm. theme. And I love how in the play, it's freezing cold outside. It's in the dead of winter, and they're still having to go out and make these and go on these sets, right? And going mm-hmm. out and meeting a potential customers. That was the plan originally for the film, but then when they decided, you know, that wasn't going to work, they had it rain, right? And so again, still creating that sort of, you're not really thinking about it, tension, but there is that tension of it just pouring rain, and you're having to still go out and work and go on these sets and meet these clients and meet these people and beg them, basically, right?
Yeah, and again, you know, I thankfully don't have to deal with stuff like that unless, you know, my store is doing an event, or we decide to go out and market. I don't have to worry about that. People are coming to us, you know.
Yeah.
Rare is it where I have to go to a customer. But yeah, man, I couldn't imagine, you know, well, I need sales for the month. Well, it's pouring rain. Well, I got to get sales.
There's also this point. So again, this movie's phenomenal, right?
But oh, yeah, 100%. There
are parts of the movie where I just think it's unbelievable, but I know it isn't unbelievable because he worked in this world. This is how it is, whatever. But it's going to people so late and calling people so late, right? They're calling people like, well, you know, I'm free at 8 or we can meet at 10. I go, at night? You know?
Well, and here's another thing. A former employee of mine, she moved over to the corporate side of AT&T. Mm-hmm. And she would be, I guess, more equal to what these guys do. She goes to customers.
Okay.
Now, even though her days end at 6, if a customer calls her and it's like 8 o'clock at night and they're like, hey, I'm ready to close this sale, she's got to go.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, as where for me, my day, if I'm closing, ends at 8. And and like, oh, well, you want to close this? I'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. and we'll close this.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's little elements like that because it's so far removed from what I do and what I'm used to and what I have done in the past work-wise, or what my parents did or anything like that. So, I mean, it's just so far removed from that it just seems so bizarre, right?
Yeah.
And what I love about this, what he's added. So let's talk about things that he's added to the story. So, okay. I guess one is the rain, which, by the way, was the most expensive thing in the movie.
I read that and I was like, really? Not the stacked cast?
No, because they wanted to do it, right? It was either before also, but Al Pacino was in the play too.
I did read that. Wasn't it him and Spacey?
Maybe Spacey, but definitely Jonathan Pryce. Jonathan Pryce is also it.
Also, shout out to Jonathan Pryce making it once again in our end of season series.
Yeah, like, you're right.
Fucking love Jonathan Pryce.
Good for Jonathan Pryce, man. He's nailing it. But anyway, so things that he's changed. Alec Baldwin, his character, not enough.
Dude. Okay? Which is insane to me because the literal like 5 minutes he's on screen, he is our catalyst for the rest of the movie.
He's electric and
dude, he crushed it.
Terrifying and he's funny, right? Because I mean, he has those brass balls in his briefcase for that purpose. That's why he has them.
Well, and you know, and now because everyone's heard it, now I know the famous line: "Coffee's for closers."
Yeah, coffee's, put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers.
And see, you know, everyone knows that line, and I'm like, oh, that's where it comes from. This movie,
that's right. So, I mean, again, no Alec Baldwin in the. I mean, he is now that character is in the play now, or was afterward. I don't know if the play is still going. I doubt it.
I would assume probably not.
Probably. But, I mean, because you need to convey to an audience and also pad the runtime a little bit, right? A play has intermission. A play has, you know, like a minute to switch the set. Hold on. Sorry, switch the sets around so that also pads the time in a play, right? So for a film, you need to do something. And there's a few things they did. One of them was Alec Baldwin's character in his speech, which is, you know, what most people remember about the movie. But then there's little things like Jack Lemmon on the phone. Like he doesn't make phone calls in the play. He does now, but He didn't then, right? Yeah. I'm wondering how, I guess it was just them talking amongst themselves about the struggle and about the sits not going well and about the leads and about the desperation of trying to make it and trying to survive, right? It must be what it is, because for me, I love that we get this, the sales side of it. Like him going to that house and talking about the fishing pole and all that, that's not in the play either. So like, I can't imagine the play without it. I can't imagine the story without it, because you need to have, you need to watch him fail to know how devastating it is to fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and to be honest, again, I know I've been talking about buying a job a lot, but like, I've had that situation where I was really confident that sale was going to happen. You know, I've been talking up what the customer wanted to do, and then I got hit with the main thing we get is, well, you know what? We'll think about it. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And it sucks. It sucks, dude. Especially just like Jack Lemmon, you give it your all. You tell the customer you're going to give them a good deal. You're making it personable, and they still, now that guy was a little rude. I've never had someone tell me like, no, I'm telling you, no, they usually just hit me with, I'm just going to think about it.
Well, in that instance, you know, this wasn't the first time they were dealing with the Rio Rancho Estates, and they weren't,
that's true.
Wasn't the first time. Right.
That's true.
Well, this is a good transition to talk about Shelley Levine, the machine. I know his character is so fascinating because we know a lot about Shelley, the machine, right? He was the Richard Roma of his time, right? Mm-hmm. So Al Pacino's character, Richard Roma, is the top salesman. He's got the silver tongue. He can talk someone into buying anything, right? He's
great. Right.
He's had his struggles, obviously. He's not at Alec Baldwin status, but he's there, right? He's making it happen. He's top on the leaderboard. That used to be Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
But Shelley is such a heartbreaking character because you can see what these years of sales have done and what a streak of bad luck looks like, right? And
mm-hmm.
how you can fall so far from grace, but still be respected by your peers, except if you're Ed Harris. We'll get to him in a minute. But you know, we also, which again, I don't understand how the play can not include him on the phone with his daughter or on the phone with the hospital, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because we feel so much more for him, right? Now his desperation is now my desperation. I want him to make the sale, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's devastating, his character, which leads to, you know, what happens at the end.
You know that reveal, which I want to wait on the reveal, but the reveal that Shelley helped. I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, I was, and the film does such a great job where you think that the scene we had just seen between Ed Harris and Alan Arkin, mm-hmm. that's how it went down.
Yeah.
And then we get the reveal that lasts literally 15 minutes of the movie, and we get the reveal. I was just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Shelley. Cause you know, we're like you said, his desperation is our desperation. And when he comes in, I closed it, $82,000. You're like, he did it.
Yeah.
He did it. And then in a matter of 15 minutes, it just all gets torn down.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
I know. But again, his triumphs are, you know, it's amazing to watch him win. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, we just want him to succeed. We're tired of seeing him fail, even though we've known him for, you know, an hour, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, you know, cause he is, I think he is the most desperate out of everybody. Alan Arkin's character, which we'll talk about a little bit, he's just broken down. You know, he's more of a sad sack, which I read something really interesting about his character, but Ed Harris is just angry.
Yeah. Yeah, Ed Harris's character, Dave Moss, he's the guy, and I'm pretty sure everyone could relate to it. He's the guy who definitely boasts more than he should, you mm-hmm. know? Like, he's the guy who's like, you know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but he's the guy who's like, oh man, I could sell anything to anyone.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him close anything.
Yeah. He's which he might be right, because, you know, like I was about to say that, you know, he's really angry at management and he's blaming the leads, right? And he's got a point, because, you know, the leads are trash. The leads, yeah, are old, leads are washed up. But, you know, he's also, you're right, I think he's a little cocky, but also he's failing.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes him out of his mind furious all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely 50-50. One half is management, because, yeah, the leads are trash, because we even hear it from Rick, who acknowledges, like, yeah, these leads are old. Mm-hmm. But the other half is, I think Moss, I think he's all talk and no show.
Or he's just given up, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are just tired. And yeah, broken down. And Alan Arkin is his character is the personification of them being broken and tired. So originally, Alan Arkin didn't want the part. He turned it down like twice.
Really?
He's like, this part, he's pathetic. You know, he's pathetic and unlikable. I don't like him at all. You know,
I am so glad he said yes.
Yeah.
I loved Alan Arkin the whole time. I love George.
So what he had to do was, he goes, fine, I'll do it, but I'm creating some backstory for him, because he can't just be pathetic and sad, you know? And so what he thought of, he said, you know what? This guy was a school teacher for 20 years. The school shut down. He needed to support his family, so he just started in sales, and he hasn't been doing it for very long. And so that was his backstory. So he's struggling with sales because he hasn't done it for very long. This wasn't what he wanted to do originally. He was a teacher, and he's just not good at it. Right.
And you know what? That makes – see, and like, I always felt for George. Like, as soon as we were introduced to him, you know, especially how the film progresses and, mm-hmm. you know, Ed Harris strong arms him into going along with the plan.
Yeah.
But that – I don't know, man. That just makes – that makes George such a more compelling character now. And I love it.
Well, see, putting it all together, these men represent everything that goes into sales in this world, mm-hmm. in this, the desperation, the anger, the broken and the despair, the disparity of, you know, losing and struggling and not being able to get it. Right. And then of course mm-hmm. you have Richard Roma, who's winning. Yeah. And he's sort of on top of his game. So we also see the good side of it, the positive side, the side where this is what it looks like when everything's going right.
You mm-hmm. know? Oh yeah, 100%. I loved getting kind of like a change of pace with Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked a lot of movies with him, you know, The Godfather, The Irishman, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Actually, that's the most far removed, I think. If I didn't say it enough in the very first episode of season 5, fucking love Al Pacino in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But I loved him in this too. Like, having him be the hot shot getting sales
mm-hmm.
was awesome. And I love that we don't realize that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Until the next day, until after.
Well, until he pulls out the brochure, right? So he pulls mm-hmm. out the brochure and then we cut to the next day. So he, you know, he's like, I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to tell you. And then boom, we're done. I'm glad we didn't see a lot of his sort of like
sales technique.
Sales technique, right? I like that his sales technique is getting you comfortable, getting you, just getting you to like him, getting you guys friendly, and hey, I have this land for sale.
You know. Because he definitely personifies the, and this is something that I've always been told ever since I started in sales, he sells himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, once he's got you sold on him, he's got you.
Yeah.
And we see that with Jonathan Price, because I just assumed Jonathan Price was another salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls out the brochure, then the next day, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so what I love about Richard Roma is he doesn't care how long it takes.
He's going to get that sale.
And he does it with such ease that I'm sure that he has just, you know, fine-tuned it over time. And that, mm-hmm. you know, because he implies later on that he's had streaks of terrible luck and streaks where he wasn't getting any sales. Right.
Yeah.
And
I apologize if everyone can hear that. The dogs are freaking out again.
But, you know, I think now he's got a rhythm to it and he's sort of going, okay, if I go in slow and easy into this thing and I'm not straight up in your face being like, hi, I work for these people. You asked for information. Here's the land you were asked information for. Are you going to buy? It's more, let me talk to you. Let's chat. Let's talk about stuff that isn't even close to related to sales. Let's talk about something else. What do you want to talk about? What's your name? What do you do?
And we especially see that with the next day with Jonathan Price, where Jonathan Price tried to back out of the deal, which also Kevin Spacey just totally fucked him on that, bro. He had him. He already had him. He already had him sold on staying with the deal, and then Kevin Spacey fucking ruined it. But anyway, you know, he's trying to back out because, you know, and I've seen this happen. It's never happened to me personally, but I've seen it happen where, you know, you sell to someone and they talk to their significant other, and then the significant other's like, well, that's not a good deal. Actually, I do have an example. It happened to Ashley and I, where someone came to our old apartment and offered internet. And I want to make this clear. Like, Ashley didn't have to talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
She can make these decisions on her own. She's her own person. She doesn't have to consult me. But she did call me afterwards and told me it. And the more I was thinking about it, the more I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Mm-hmm.
More so, I guess, not really like the Jonathan Price situation in the film, but I was like, that I don't think they were being honest with you. And yeah. I did a little bit of due diligence. And I was like, yeah, they weren't.
Mm.
And so essentially they got her to sign up for internet that they didn't even offer to our apartment. And so I called and canceled the very next day.
Yeah.
But you know, that's essentially what happens with Al Pacino and Jonathan Price, but a little bit more of it's of a situation where his wife kind of, or at least that's what is implied, his wife makes all the decisions. And
or, you know, maybe it was just so like so obvious that he was being taken for a ride that, you know, he was vulnerable, sad, drunk. Like he doesn't know. Like he was just, you know, along for the ride with Richard Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that sounds like a sidebar. That sounds like a show that should be on like travel, Along for the Ride with Richard Roma.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah. And then like I mentioned, and Kevin Spacey just fucking ruins it, further proving, what you'd been saying, that he doesn't know what he's doing in this office.
No, because he's never been a salesman. And so what I loved about, you know, how this movie treats the salesman in relation to each other there really is this sort of bond and brotherhood with the salesman, because as soon as they see Jonathan Pryce walk in the building, Roma talks to Levine. He goes, "Hey, man, this guy's about to come in. You're a client. I'm selling you on this. You ready?" He goes, "Got it." You know, mm-hmm. And then they role play and it works almost.
Yeah. Well, yeah, almost. Yeah. He pretty much, you know, he's got him on not backing out of the deal. But as soon as Kevin Spacey was like, "Oh, your check cleared, you're good." And, you know, because then that means, like he's been saying, he's gonna have to get an attorney and they're gonna have to give them that money back. And it's,
yeah.
Oof.
I know.
Dude. Well,
and again, it's, you know, it's, you feel for them, right? And you get mm-hmm. really excited. But then when you take a step back, they're like, "Man, these guys are really sleazy," you know? Cause,
yeah.
Because like, it's not honest what they're doing, right? A thing that, that Shelley does often is he pretends to have a secretary over the phone, which, it's funny.
Yeah.
And also, you know, he's giving himself validity. It's that Wolf of Wall Street mentality of everyone is the vice president, right? If you're on mm-hmm. the phone with them, it gives you credibility to say that you're the vice president of sales, right?
Yeah.
And so all of them claim to be the vice president of sales. And giving themselves a little more gusto so that it gives them more credibility with these would-be clients. Which is kind of how sales works.
It really does, you know. You know, it's, again, a part of it is selling yourself mm-hmm. to these customers. But it's also, you know, like in my sales, you have to be the expert, mm-hmm. you know. Like, yeah, someone could come in and they may know things about phones, but like we have to be the expert to be like, "Oh, well, you know, boom, 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 boom." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what sales is, you know. And, you know, and like you said, giving yourself validity. Like even Al Pacino does that in front of Jonathan Pryce. Mm-hmm. You know, like Kevin Spacey's character, Williamson, like, "Hey, Williamson, I'm going to need the Amex. We got to get," because he's still role playing with Shelley. "Yeah, we gotta get," whatever name he told him, like, "Yeah, we gotta get him on a first class, you know, back to Florida, you know, I'm gonna use the, I'll get that all set up later," you know?
Yeah.
And it is sleazy, but, you know, for a moment it works on Jonathan Pryce, because Jonathan Pryce is like, "Wow, if he's gonna do that, man, like, mm-hmm. what is he gonna do for me?" You know?
Yeah, you know, and it's, again, it gives him validity. It makes him mm-hmm. seem a lot more important than he actually is, right?
Yeah.
And that what the customer is getting is a big deal, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And again, like, I have heard people in sales use some of these things they learned from the play or the movie. Like, they're like, you know, and people like study this movie for sales. Like, it's a good blueprint for this is how sales works, and this is how salesmen operate, and this is things like tactics or what would you say, strategies that they use, mm-hmm. right?
You know, to be honest, when you'd mentioned that last week, I was like, okay, maybe there is something I could take from here. I won't be taking anything from this.
No.
But the one thing that at least I can agree with the film is that these salesmen build value in what they're selling. Mm-hmm. You know, like this, you know, like, you know, Richard Roma, like this is an investment.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually said that before to someone. Like I had someone who was on the fence about getting a new phone because they didn't want to pay. It was a new phone. They didn't want to get protection on their phone. And I was like, "Hey, like, this phone's an investment."
Yeah.
You know, this is a $1,200 phone. Like, wouldn't you want to protect that? You know, and, you know, I've built value in other things. So even though there was nothing I could take away from this film, I was like, that's exactly what I have to deal with. But I would never, I would never call a customer and be like, oh yeah, you won a reward, but I'm going to need you and your husband to come in and sign up. You know? Like, I would never do that. And, or be like, you know, Grace, yeah, get the Amex. Oh yeah, no.
It's great. And again, I couldn't imagine this movie without those phone calls.
Absolutely.
It's perfect. So this is a good transition. So the first time we meet any of them in this film, it's making phone calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the cinematography of the opening, not the opening credit crawl or the credit, the opening credits, even though it's great because it's not your traditional font. It's got that blue backlighting, the jazz music, and the train. Love it. It's awesome. Really sets the mood for where we're going. But the cinematography in the phone booths with the bright blues and the deep reds of the phone booths, oh my God, it's perfect. Anyway, I had to shout that out because it's so nice to look at.
No, yeah, and it's the and throughout the whole movie, the cinematography is just so on point. I loved how fluid it was with the camera, like how the camera's sort of gliding in and out of shots between some of the guys, or maybe like around their head. It was just, yeah, cinematography was amazing.
But this is a good transition for we can start to pick up momentum for the ending, because Ed Harris, one of the first people we meet, this guy's had enough. Okay.
Yeah.
And he just got, he just got bullied. By Alec Baldwin, lead sales for Mitch and Murray. And, you know, really, I mean, really just got reamed and was belittled and talked down to and, you know, treated like a child, you know? And so he's really just had enough. He's tired of fighting. Again, everyone's tired except for Roma. But I'm sure he's had moments where he was tired, right? I mean, there, you know, he again spoke about, you know, having these streaks of failure in the past. But again, it's with, it, what, I'm sorry, what is his name? Ed Harris's character.
Dave Moss.
Thank you, Moss. Moss is so angry. Again, he represents the anger of being in sales.
Yeah.
That he strikes up a plan with Alan Arkin. Again, I forgot his name. I apologize.
George. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but they just called him George a lot.
Strikes up a plan to say, hey, we can steal those Glengarry leads. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But George, you'll have to do it because they'll suspect me because I'm angry and I'm a hothead and I complain out loud. Right.
I've already complained about this, so they'll immediately suspect me.
Right. And so they talk about it. You know, I like how before it gets to that point, they're really talking about other people they know who are very successful and they're doing something else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how, you know, sales is a dead end and we're never going to make it. It's, again, they're desperate just to succeed, right? And sales has got to be the hardest way to do that. But, and so, of course, George is very, very scared, right? Again, he's, his backstory, you know, he's new at this, right? Right. And even if it wasn't his backstory, he's still sort of just broken and sad and kind of over it. He's over it the same way Ed Harris is as Moss is, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So right. Moss, where Moss is angry, George is just sad and depressed. Yeah.
Just kind of like, well, all right.
And so they struck up this plan and it kind of seems just like talk, right? Because, you know, yes, Ed Harris, Moss, sorry. Yes, he's very serious, right? But it's like, yeah, but you're not going to do it, right? And George isn't going to do it, right?
Right.
George is too sad. George is too broken. George is too terrified to do anything like that, right? And Ed Harris obviously can't, because he's right. They're going to suspect him immediately. So,
yep.
So we kind of forget about it. And of course, this is when later Jack Lemmon is bribing Kevin Spacey for the leads, just for two leads, $50 a lead, you know, shit. And this is kind of where, you know, you can see their desperation and sort of how, and sort of how dire his situation is. Cause he's like, all right, give me the $100. He goes, I don't have $100. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He had 30 or something.
He was like, I have the 30. I'll give you the rest tomorrow.
And he's sorry if you guys see me scratching my elbow. I have like 11 bug bites on my elbow. So there you can kind of see that, wow, he's really hurting for money. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But he's willing to risk it all for a shot at these new leads, which he might not even close, by the way, which is insane. I mean, these guys are true gamblers. These guys are just fierce competitors with themselves and with each other, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sort of, at least Levine is definitely institutionalized when it comes to sales and when it comes to, you know, the Glengarry properties. And Mitch and Murray, he's in it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get to the end, so once we get to the next morning and the place has been broken into and they stole the computers, they stole the phones. Well, I guess not computers, but they stole the phones. And they stole the contracts, right? And the leads.
Mm-hmm.
They're all gone. And so now, of course, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They were planning on robbing the place. I guess he did it, right?
Right.
And you can see how scared George is. Mm-hmm. You can see how sort of cockily angry Ed Harris is, like always. And I love how they interact with the police. Holy shit, man. These guys are something else, man, with the cops. It's the best.
I know, dude, that they have the gall to, especially, you know, Richard Roma just being like, I'll be with you in 1 second.
Yeah. It's like, awesome. Yeah, these guys don't give a shit.
Well, and I love that he straight up tells him like, you want a confession? Fine. I confess. I did it. Oh, now will you leave me alone? And I'm like, oh my God.
I know. These guys, man, I'm telling you, these guys are tough guys. You know, they have to go out and convince strangers to buy something from them for an exorbitant amount of money. They're not afraid of cops, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that they're the only person who is George, right?
No. Well, and again, man, like I was saying, the film does such a great thing of setting up that, like, okay, the George followed through with the plan. George mm-hmm. robbed the place because George is being extra nervous and sad. Yeah. But I love that Richard is like, you're a good man, George. You know, it's okay if you're nervous. You know who is nervous? Thieves. You know, so you're like, oh, okay, maybe George is going to get away with it.
Yeah.
But man, that reveal, bro, that reveal, I was like, it's not been the most shocking reveal that we've done mm-hmm. on a film, but I was like, holy shit.
But you didn't see it coming, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way you saw that it was going to be Shelley who took the leads.
Yeah, because Shelley comes in all happy-go-lucky, like, yep, close the deal, mm-hmm. $82,000, you know? And then, and I love it's because Kevin Spacey caught it. Like, how did you know I made it up that the... That customer's contract hadn't mm-hmm. been stolen. That was in the bank. And dude, I was like, what the fuck? Like, what?
But it's another thing. So what this, again, you're so used to it by this point. Uh-huh. But when the movie starts, you're like, how are they talking to their boss like that? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's the manager, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, yeah, he's a terrible person, and this, like, he's a prick, and he doesn't know what he's doing, and he doesn't know how to do sales, but you can't talk to him like that, can you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he's still your boss.
But yeah, I mean, the string of insults that Shelly gives to him at the end, which eventually reveals his downfall, which is that he did end up stealing the contracts and stealing the leads. Because again, Shelly will do anything to get back to where he was, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get back to the peak salesman that he used to be, the machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And God, he almost had it with those people too, the Nyborgs.
Yeah. You know, but here's the other thing. I was thinking about this. Yeah. You know, because he tells him, you know, he tells Kevin Spacey, you know, I got an $80,000 sale. Like, what's the problem here? And, you know, then he drops the bomb on him that these people are, as he puts it, they're nuts. You know, they just want to talk to a salesman. They have no money. You saw the state of their house. But my thing, and that, because again, being in sales, is like, then why was he given that lead to begin with?
Yeah.
Like, that's just setting him up for failure.
Well, and again, he told him, he goes, well, why? And he's like, because I don't like you. You know? Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, honestly, again, but it's further proof that Kevin Spacey's character is not a good person.
No.
Because a normal manager wouldn't be in that position if he didn't like a salesman.
Yeah.
They either, well, A, they would have to suck it up and like deal with it. You can't mm-hmm. You can't play favorites. Or two, you know, I would hope that maybe the company would be like, nah, you're fired or something. But yeah, it's the last 15 minutes, man, are so insane.
I know. Yeah.
And then, you know, adding insult to injury, when Roma gets done talking to the cops, he again is like all over Shelly, like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, great job on that sale.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember starting here, I wanted to be just like you. And I was just like, oh, that's got to sting.
And it's, you know, it is, again, man, Shelly is just a devastating character.
Yeah.
He embodies the soul shattering desperation and pressure of the job.
Right. Now here's a question for you, buddy. Since I feel like we're getting close to wrapping up. So definitely he's probably going to jail. But since he pretty much also confessed to this being Moss's idea, mm-hmm. do you think that Moss got it too? Or do you think since Kevin Spacey made it abundantly clear that I don't like you, he put it all on Shelly?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because that's sort of the fun of, you know, these sort of open-ended endings. Hey, quit it. Sorry, my cat. And, you know, the sort of like, what's going to happen next? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Shelly's going down. Right. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is Moss going to go down too? Who knows? Probably, you know, Kevin Spacey's character is probably just so sick of getting talked to like that.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the main two, I think, besides Roma. But Roma is at least doing something for the company for right now, you know.
That's
at least selling property, so he can kind of deal with it, you know, for now. But the other two, who needs them, right?
Yeah.
In terms of a managerial stance, you know, have them both go down, who cares, right?
Yeah. You know, and I am only slightly disappointed that we didn't get to actually meet Mitch and Murray. I was like, who are these nameless or these faceless
it's dudes? The name of the company, so I assume that they're just like the CEOs or the founders of the company.
Yeah, man, this movie was awesome, bro.
Yeah.
Like, like, even though, yeah, I will not be implementing anything into my sales technique from this movie, it's just a good peek at what people in this kind of sales have to go, like the hoops they have to jump through. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, this is 92, so, you know, I'm sure most real estate, you know, salesmen like that probably don't have to jump through so many hoops now, mm-hmm. but I don't know. It was still fantastic.
Yeah. Like, when I was driving back and forth, from Midland to McKinney, when Haley was living up here, I got so tired of music and audiobooks and podcasts that I just put on movies I could listen to. And this was one of them. That I could just listen to it and I know exactly what's happening. And the dialogue is so fantastic that, you know, you don't really need to look at it.
Because like I mentioned, I don't know if I said it on mic or off mic, but, you know, I finished the movie right before we started recording and I was listening to it. I had to go to PetSmart to get the dog's food and I was listening to it while I was at PetSmart. Mm-hmm. I had my phone in my pocket and I was just listening to it.
There's a movie called Boiler Room.
I know that one with Vin Diesel and Giovanni Ribisi.
Giovanni Ribisi.
Ribisi, that's
about,
how you say it.
They talk about this movie in
Boiler. Really?
It's all they talk
that's
about. In Boiler Room. They're like, the characters in Boiler Room are obsessed with Glenn Ross. That's a fact. Look it up. Watch it again.
That's amazing.
I'm almost 100% sure it's Boiler Room that those characters are obsessed with Glenn Ross.
Well, that would make sense. Isn't that movie like a Wall Street movie or some shit like that?
Something like that. Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
But, well, Jeremy, are you ready to wrap up?
I am. Glad you liked it. This movie's awesome. Again, seen it a bunch of times. We'll see it a bunch of times after this. There's something about it. I don't know. I think I love the way they talk.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way they interact with each other. There's something about Jack Lemmon's voice that I really like. And that's a weird thing that I like about it, I guess, because it's not really a film studies thing, but I just like his voice. I don't know.
It's Jack Lemmon.
Next season, get ready. I'll probably do a couple of Jack Lemmons. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I loved it. I definitely want to show Ashley this movie. Just mainly for the fact that it's just so fast paced, you know.
Oh,
I think she would I think she would like that.
I will get. So, 10 years ago, maybe more, maybe 15 years ago, Alec Baldwin was hosting SNL. It was the Christmas episode, and they do a Glenn Ross sketch.
That is amazing
with elves.
Oh my god, I'm gonna have to watch that now.
It's tremendous. It's hilarious.
Wait, I think I have seen clips from that.
It's so funny. Because they do the speech verbatim, but they change like the subject to elf and Christmas things. And of course no swearing, but
imagine if SNL would just allow swearing.
So yeah, NBC. So Google or YouTube Glenn Ross SNL elves. I'm sure that'll get you there. It's hysterical. I love it. So if you can't get enough Glenn Ross, check that out.
That's amazing. Like I said, I think I have seen that one, but I'm probably gonna have to watch it again. So, buddy, what is gonna be part 3 of our interseason series?
That's a great question. So I have an answer.
Which I already know.
Yeah, I know. What do Moonstruck, Congo, and Wild Mountain Time have in common?
I don't know.
They're written by the same person. So, John Patrick Shanley wrote and directed an adaptation of his own play, Doubt, which we will be doing next week, starring Meryl Streep, Amy Adams, and of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman. So,
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Yeah, man, this is another one I'm really excited for. I remember, pretty sure Amy Adams and Meryl Streep both won Oscars for the movie.
I don't know if they won Oscars. I mean, Meryl Streep,
they were definitely
nominated. Let's see. Yes, they were nominated, but did not win. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Wow, all four of them were. Meryl Streep, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Amy Adams, and Viola Davis were all nominated for Oscars.
Really? Oh, yep. Shit, Viola Davis is in this? Yep. Oh, shit, son.
Yeah. Doubt. I saw it once around the time it came out. So this would have been 2008. Yeah. And I remember really liking it. And I don't remember anything about it. So,
then I'm excited to have fresh eyes for you.
Yeah.
Cause again, man, if I didn't say it enough in our Magnolia episode or our 100th episode special, Big Lebowski, I fucking love Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Schenectady, New York.
Oh, Schenectady. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. I fucking love him. He will forever be missed. Mm-hmm. It's so sad too, man. He had just gotten clean again.
Damn it.
I know. But you know what? Like you mentioned with William Friedkin, the best way to honor him is to keep watching his work. So I'm excited. I'm excited for Doubt because
yeah.
I will never say no to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Of course.
Best villain of Mission Impossible 3. I will die on that hill.
Yeah.
But all right, everyone. Well, we hope you enjoyed Glengarry Glen Ross, and we will see you next week for Doubt.